must be a good microphone. If you hit on it, you can't hear it. At home, I go like this if everybody's talking. You hear it?
Barely.
How about that? Good microphone. Not used to that. Okay, today is Wednesday. We are halfway. Well, we'll be halfway in about 30 minutes. We are going to look at the second song prophecy in Isaiah. It seems like I talked a lot so far. We're only in the second one, but here's where we are. Isaiah 49, verses 1 through 6. Now, probably, Katie asked me this one time when during this study, what is my favorite song of the four? Now I'm going back and forth. This was it. I think it might still be it. But we'll see. I'll give you the verdict at the end. I had a question from my mother-in-law just before class. She said, what's a bullseye? What does that mean? So I don't know if anybody else was, didn't get what I was saying, but what I was trying to say in a roundabout, muddied way, I guess, is that 2 Kings chapter 18, verse 7 is the bullseye that Hezekiah hit, I believe. Like when he told, when he rebelled against the Assyrians and told God in so many words or in his actions that he was going to serve the Almighty in heaven, that was the bullseye that he hit, I believe. And that's the bullseye we have to hit in our service towards our Father in heaven, that we are going to serve him, that we are going to submit ourselves as servants in his sight. So, Isaiah 49, let's read the verses here. It says, "Listen, O isles, unto me, and hearken, ye people from far. The Lord hath called me from the womb, from the bowels of my mother hath he made mention of my name. And he hath made my mouth like a sharp sword, in the shadow of his hand hath he hid me, and made me a polished shaft, in his quiver hath he hid me. And said unto me, Thou art my servant, O Israel, in whom I will be glorified. Then said I said, I have labored in vain, I have spent my strength for naught and in vain. Yet surely my judgment is with the Lord, and my work with my God. And now saith the Lord that formed me from the womb, to be a servant, to bring Jacob again to him. Though Israel be not gathered, yet shall I be glorious in the eyes of the Lord, and my God shall be my strength. And he said, It is a light thing that thou shouldest be my servant, to raise up the tribes of Jacob, and to restore the preserved of Israel. I will also give thee for a light to the Gentiles, that thou mayest be my salvation unto the end of the earth." So this prophecy shows that the servant, and this is why I feel, I guess, it's probably one of my favorites, is because the prophecy shows that the servant is in the hands of his maker. If we refer back to our last class in 42 verse 6, which I never did, but Katie had a picture from yesterday during the activities of this idea of the father holding the hand of the child, and she had a picture from behind of Jake holding, I got her name right yesterday, hang on, what was her name?
Juniper.
He's holding Juniper's hand as they're in front of this the slide thing yesterday, and that little girl's holding her dad's hand, and you can see that she's very confident standing on her feet because she has her father there to uphold her on her feet. And this is the idea that we looked at. So in this song, we find this idea that Yahweh is holding the hand of his servant, and we're gonna see this throughout this song today. So in verse 1 it says, especially at the end of the verse, halfway through, "The Lord hath called me from the womb." Now, we've already heard so much on this this week, this idea of being called from the womb. And Brother Robbie on Sunday started talking about this, and I said, well, I guess I'm sunk, right? My talk is, or my third class is right on this subject. He skips right over Hezekiah and goes to Josiah. I said, that's great. So I asked that you would leave this, my brother Al wrote up here. I'm going to destroy it today. But what you left it up there, which I appreciate, because I want to add to this list. And it almost seems like this theme we have for the Bible school so far in a lot of the classes. And I had no idea he was going to speak on this, and I don't think Brother Bill thought that Brother Robbie was going to speak on that. And I don't know if Brother Al talked to both of them and came up with this topic as well, but here we go. So we put Hezekiah, which Brother Al put in, so that's good. And just as a kind of a time to get our minds rolling, who else could we add to the list? Maybe not by exact name that God gave them the exact name, but who else could we say was called from the womb? Okay. So let's put him over here, right? He was, we'll put him here. And then I can put a P in there for Samson. All right. All right, Samson. Who else? Samuel. I'll put him over here. Good. You before he. Who?
Jeremiah.
Okay, Jeremiah, any reference to that? Anybody? Jeremiah was a really good one because it says the same thing, right? Look at Jeremiah 1:5. I'm not going to look up all the verses on all of them, but in Jeremiah 1:5 it says, "Before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee. And before thou camest forth out of the womb, I sanctified thee, and I ordained thee a prophet unto the nation." It doesn't name him by name, but we have this idea of him from the womb. What about New Testament? Paul, you have a reference? Who said that? Galatians 1:5. Can you read that, please? If you got it. Is that not right? All right. What's in Galatians? Sorry. You find it, you can read it. But Paul, he talks about him being called from the womb or from a child. Jesus, who has it?
1:15.
Okay, we got the one. Go ahead.
But when it pleased God to separate me from my mother's womb and call me by his grace.
Okay, separated from the womb. So we'll put him over here. Is he over here? See, I'm telling you, my teachers had enough of me with handwriting. They gave me one of those little things to put on the pencil so you put your fingers in the right spot. Didn't work. Okay, who else can you name? We're not going to look at all these verses just for the sake of time. How about John the Baptist? Yeah. Well, he's on there already. Samuel. Moses. Just think about his miraculous birth and him in the reeds and all that. Definitely. Okay, so we have all these men, and so we have and I would say all of us are called at some, on some level. God knows us before we were formed, which is a very high calling, as we talked about yesterday. So this man, Hezekiah, if you go back to Isaiah 49, this servant, if it is Hezekiah, which I believe it is, was called for a specific job. All these men on this list were called for a specific job. If you look in the Septuagint, it says, "He hath called my name," and in the literal Hebrew, it's "He has caused my name to be remembered from the bowels of my mother." Hezekiah's name means Yahweh is strength. And isn't that appropriate in his life and the things that he had to do to take care of the nation of Israel, to give them strength at this specific time in their lives and in their kingdom? When Hezekiah, Sennacherib's army is on the way. Okay, so let's go in the opposite direction a little bit. Who is the father of Hezekiah?
Ahaz.
Okay, Ahaz, good, bad. Okay, terrible, I would say. Very, very bad. All right, let's go back to, and here's another hint as to why this possibly could apply to Hezekiah, or does apply to Hezekiah. Go back to Isaiah chapter 7, which has been referenced already this week. There's a problem, same problem that most of the kings had. There was an impending army coming against them. And so God, through his mercy, wants to give Ahaz a sign. He gives him something here. He wants to comfort Ahaz. So Isaiah is sent to him with Isaiah's son, and he gives him a sign. Ahaz won't ask for the sign, but Isaiah gives it to him anyway. It's in verse 14. It says, "Therefore the Lord himself shall give you, Ahaz, you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel." So how is that a sign for Ahaz? Who's this talking about, number one?
Christ,
right? Was Ahaz going to see that happen? Never going to see that happen. But what was he going to see happen? What was something? You got to have something in your lifetime. If he's going to give you a sign, you have to see the sign. So what was the sign for Ahaz? Somebody was going to be born. And who was it? Hezekiah. Good. That's what I believe. Hezekiah. We're going to try to go through this a little bit. Go to 2 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 1. And here's the, I think this is why I like this song, in general. Because of this aspect of this song. That this man, Hezekiah, would be from the womb. From the womb, God knew him, and it was very specific in the way he was brought into this world. God, I am messed up in 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles 28, verse 1. It says, "Hezekiah began to reign when he was 5 and 20 years old, and he reigned 9 and 20 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Abijah, the daughter of Zechariah." Here's a little clue that we're going to get into who Hezekiah was and how he came about. Was he the sign from Ahaz, or that Ahaz got? Now, when we talk about this verse, there's no mention of Ahaz whatsoever, right? Brother Dan, you and I were talking about this yesterday. There's no mention of his father, okay? Hezekiah comes on the scene, and his mother is the one that's mentioned, which is not totally abnormal. This happens in a few places. I think Brother Robbie brought this up when Josiah, his mother, was mentioned as well. There's no mention of Ahaz. He couldn't be more different than Ahaz, his father, could he? Like they were at the total opposite ends of the spectrum, Ahaz and Hezekiah. Look at 2 Kings chapter 16. Let's just get an idea of who Ahaz was real quick. I'm sure we're all probably pretty familiar with how bad he was. But let's look at just the one verse here. 2 Kings chapter 16 and verse 7. It says, "So Ahaz sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, saying, 'I am thy servant. I am thy servant and thy son. Come up and save me out of the hand of the king of Syria and out of the hand of the king of Israel, which rise up against me.'" I mean, could you get any more opposite than your father? Look at the bullseye. What did Hezekiah do? He rebelled against the king of Assyria and said that, "I am your servant, Yahweh. I am the servant of the Most High God in heaven." And his father says, "I am your servant. I am your son," to this man from Assyria. Not even king of Israel. I'm talking Assyria. Okay? That's how different they were. We can go into more detail and go down in this chapter and look at the ridiculousness of Ahaz and how he thought that if he had this altar brought to Jerusalem that somehow their gods would save him out of all these troubles. He was way, way, way off base. Okay, they were totally, totally different. So here's where I think we come into the reason, or one of the reasons why Hezekiah was so righteous. What was his mother's name? Abijah. And his mother's name means Yahweh is his father. Yahweh is his father. Whose father? Yahweh was whose father? Hezekiah's father. Right? The little boy Hezekiah that was born was fathered, we know naturally, by Ahaz, but really his father was the God of heaven. Go to 2 Chronicles chapter 28. Go back a little bit here. Second Chronicles 28. I just want to look at Ahaz just a little further to hopefully demonstrate this point. Second Chronicles 28, verses 1 and 2. It says that Ahaz was 20 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem, but he did not that which was right in the sight of the Lord, like David his father, for he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel, and made also molten images for Balaam. So we find about him that he walked after Israel. He was only 36 when he died. And how old was Hezekiah when he began to reign? Just got to do a little math there, okay? Let's turn the wheels a little on Wednesday. How old? 25. So how old does that make Ahaz when Hezekiah was born? 11 years old, okay, when he was born. So possibly when Abijah got pregnant, Ahaz was 10 years old. That's what the record says. Now, I have a 10-year-old boy. We're all adults here. I have a 10-year-old boy at home. Is this possible? Yes, it's possible. Is this miraculous? We'll leave that to you. Was it miraculous? And if it was by natural means, I believe it was. This is probably one of the closest to a virgin birth you could find, or a miraculous birth you could find in Scripture. And I know some of the other kings had children at a young age, but come on. He was 10 years old, or 11, when Abijah was pregnant. Almost miraculous, I would say. Very, very close to the virgin birth. I wouldn't say it was the virgin birth, because obviously this is a type. Right? Type and a shadow. It is a shadow. It's not the actual thing. The actual thing is the anti-type. But almost miraculous. The servant of Yahweh, just as all these, were called from the womb. Closest, I would say, to a virgin birth of anybody recorded. Is there a type in that? Absolutely. So, next I want to talk about Hezekiah as a child. What does the scripture, the record say about Hezekiah growing up for these first 25 years? Zero. Nothing. So what was he doing for 25 years? Because we just looked at the contrast between Ahaz and him when he began to reign, and we went through in our first class what he did. How did he get to that point? How did he get to this point where he was so righteous? So against the ways of his father Ahaz. Well, I think the clue is in verse 2 of the song that we read in Isaiah chapter 49. Let's go back to Isaiah 49, verse 2. And see what it says here. It says, "And he, the servant, our God, hath made my mouth," the Father, "hath made my mouth like a sharp sword, in the shadow of his hand hath he hid me, and made me a polished shaft, in his quiver hath he hid me." Okay, so we have a couple things here. One, he hid him in the shadow of his hand. He made his mouth a sharp sword. He made him a polished shaft. He put me in a quiver to use for later. This is the servant saying these things. He recognized that something was different. There was an influence in his life, and it was from Yahweh in heaven. From a very, very young age, he had this. So how did this happen? That's the question I have to ask. If we're going to find a lesson in this, how did that happen? How did he see this? How did he veer so far from his father's course that he hit the bullseye? How did he go down a straight line? There's no mention of how this happened. But I think there is a mention of how this happened. And it's in the verse 1 of chapter 29. And it's this woman named Abijah. I don't believe we can have enough emphasis on this in our lives. We don't see the emphasis enough on this in the scripture. And that's the mother, the women of the house, teaching and instructing our children, understanding this opportunity that they have, we have, as providers of God's word in our houses, in our ecclesias, the truth and the principles of God that have been revealed to us, God's influence in our life. We are born with this opportunity to know the truth. We have the truth. We have it. And that we can accept the truth and be part of what Brother Scott's talking about in his class. The restoration of the kingdom of Israel, truly. To be in that kingdom, to glorify God forever. And Abijah, I believe, recognized this. So here's my homework for tonight. Brother Scott gave homework. His is 20 minutes. Mine's 1 minute. Okay? If you have a wife, you need to thank her tonight for what she's done for your children. You don't have any children. You need to think about who taught you the truth. Or some woman that influenced you in your life, some sister that influenced you to bring you to where you are. That's what you need to do tonight. There's some woman in your life, in everybody's life here, that affected you in some way. And I see it in my wife, my sister, my mother, the people around me, aunts, uncles, that they have this love for the truth and they can convey it to a child better than I can as a man for some reason. They recognize this in some motherly fashion and they know how to give it to our children. So that's your homework for tonight, okay? Call them on the phone if they're not here. Thank them for this opportunity that they've given to you. We all have this great opportunity to train up a child in the way he should go. And when he is old, he will not depart from the truth. Abijah did just that. She knew there was something about this birth of Hezekiah that was more than just some natural thing. How did she know? How did she know that this was more than just some ordinary birth? I think there's some more clue. It says who her father was. Go back to 2 Chronicles chapter 26, verse 5. This is who Abijah's father was. His name was Zechariah. Different Zechariah than the prophet. Well, he was a prophet. Different than the Zechariah that wrote Zechariah. 2 Chronicles 26, verse 5. Says, and he sought God in the days of Zechariah. This is talking about Uzziah, who had understanding. Zechariah had understanding in the visions of God. And as long as Uzziah sought the Lord, God made him to prosper. Funny how that works, right? We talked about in our first class. When you seek after God, you prosper. So Zechariah, his name means Yahweh hath remembered, or Yahweh has remembered. Remembered what? He remembered why Hezekiah came along. He remembered this covenant that was made with Abraham. He remembered that God is always gracious and merciful, that he gives people the chance again to turn, to be servants, to be reformed. And after the life of Ahaz, they needed that. Right? They needed it. They were so far off course, they had to come back. And even though they were so far off course, what does God say? I'm going to give you mercy. I'm going to give you this man that's going to help you get back on track to reform your ways. And they did. And they did. People were into it. They understood what was going on. They liked the temple worship. He reestablished all these things, the worship in the temple. What about when we go forward now in the antitype? What about Mary? That was a virgin birth, truly a virgin birth. She was given this opportunity to raise the great Redeemer of the world. And she did it. The Son of God she had in her womb. And for 30 years, she taught that man what was necessary, along with many other people, right? His father until he died. But she was the one, right? She nurtured that young boy to bring him to all men so that they could repent, that we can repent. So for 25 years, God, through Abijah, polished this shaft, right? He polished these arrows. And then God hit him in the quiver for those 25 years. And the words were from God. Okay, this was all from God and through his tool. Go to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. I just want to talk about this idea of the words being from God. This wasn't something that Abijah just made up, but this was according to the prophets and the words that were spoken. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 1. As we start to apply these, some of these lessons to us in our lives. I'm having a rough time turning pages today. Ecclesiastes 12. Verse 11, the words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the masters of assembly, which are given from one shepherd. Right? These words are something to guide us, to goad us, or used as a goad or nails to fasten these things together. We had a talk about that as well. But these are the things that shape us and polish us and make us move different places. If you look at, I think it's already been referenced in Revelation 1:16, it talks about this sword, the two-edged sword being sharp as a two-edged sword, the mouth of Christ. Now go to John chapter 7, verses 45 and 46. John 7, 45 and 46. It says, then came the officers of the chief priests and Pharisees, and they said unto him, why have you not brought him? Right? They went out to go get Jesus, go get him, you need to arrest him. What did they say? The officers answered, never man spake like this. Right? The words that came out of Jesus' mouth, they couldn't believe it, right? They've never seen anything like that. John chapter 12, verse 49 and 50. He says, for I have not spoken of myself, but the Father which sent me. He gave me a commandment, what I should say and what I should speak. And I know that his commandment is life everlasting. Whatsoever I speak, therefore, even as the Father said unto me, so I speak. So these are the words that come from the Father in heaven. They're channeled through different tools, which I believe in this song would have been Abijah, and in the anti-tank would have been Mary. Again, he said, we don't know very much about Christ as a child either. We have one instance, and that's him at 12 years old in the temple. We understand, hopefully, we're very familiar with that. What does he say to his mother when she says, what are you doing? Little 12-year-old, what are you doing? He says what to her? I need to be about my Father's business. And he's in there stumping the lawyers and the doctors with this knowledge. The polished shaft hidden in the quiver. So, was this just given to him? Was he just that, 5 years old? Just some brainiac? Is that how it happened? It's not how it happened. It's like, I guess you don't use these anymore, but put a disc in the computer, hit the button, and it all goes on the computer. It's not how it works. Or a thumb drive, boom, it's there, the info's on there, and you transfer it over here. It's not how it works. Look at Luke chapter 5, verse 16. This is how it happened, and this is how, we don't have record of it when he was young, but we do have record of how he accomplished these things when he was old. Older. Luke chapter 5, verse 16. It says there, and he withdrew himself into the wilderness and prayed. He withdrew himself into the wilderness and prayed. This wasn't the prayer of a couple minutes, kind of a prayer that we give when we get up here in front of everybody. This is a prayer of communion with his Father. There's a lesson for us in this, that we, brothers and sisters, have to withdraw sometimes ourselves, by ourselves, and commune with the Father, which is, I understand, it's a hard thing to do in this day and age because we're so busy with everything else we have to do. How did Christ know the law so well? Well, this wasn't just one time. If you look at some different translations of Luke 5:16, the ESV, it says desolate places, plural. NASB says he often slipped away for a time to meditate and study. We, brothers and sisters, have to make time for study, to clear our minds at whatever time it is, whatever point you can find in your life. You have to do this daily. We need to withdraw ourselves into the shadow of God's hand, right? It said that there. He hid me in the shadow of his hand. Because of what I said in our first class or second class, at some point in your life, the trial is going to get very hard. And this is what Hezekiah had to deal with, right? With all these things that were going on. And this is what Christ had to deal with. At some point, it's going to come to a head. At some point, you have to be ready for a very, very hard trial. You have to get past that. Preparation for verse 4 in Isaiah 49. Let's go back there. Isaiah 49, verse 4. This is, I believe, the hardest point in Hezekiah's life. This is when he was on the teeter-totter. This also is for us sometimes in our lives. And when was Christ, would you say, at his worst moment? You had to name one point in his life. When was it? Where? Wait a minute, I hear a couple say it loud. Okay, we have a garden. What do we have in the back? Garden. That's what I would say. This is when it all came together for him. And we can see that in his reaction, right? We can see it in his life. We have to prepare for this verse in 49:4. It says, then I said, I have labored in vain. This is the servant talking. I have labored in vain. I have spent my strength for naught. And in vain, yet surely my judgment is with the Lord and my work with my God. This is where the rubber meets the road, as I said yesterday, the day before. This is when it could either go one way or the other in our lives. And we all know these different trials that we may have had in our lives, that we were saying this same thing in verse 4, were we not? Anybody ever said something like this in your life, in your mind? That I've spent my labor in vain? Have you ever said that? Have you ever thought that? You don't have to answer that to me. Did this happen to Hezekiah? In his life? Remember all the history that we've looked at already. I've already alluded to this. Go to 2 Kings chapter 20. 2 Kings chapter 20, verses 1 through 3. In those days was Hezekiah sick unto death, and the prophet Isaiah, the son of Amos, came to him and said unto him, thus saith the Lord, set thine house in order, for thou shalt die and not live. And he turned his face to the wall and prayed unto the Lord, saying, I beseech thee, O Lord, remember now how I have walked before thee in truth and with a perfect heart, and have done that which is good in thy sight. And Hezekiah wept sore. This is where he was in Isaiah 49. Who was outside the walls? The Assyrians. They were out there. He had this sickness from Isaiah. Gives him this news here. Awful news that he's going to die and he's going to have a bad disease. And it happened right away. How did he look? Probably disfigured. Did he have pain? Yeah, he had pain. What about the people that are out there listening to Rabshakeh's words, disheartened? Spent 14 years getting the people back to where they need to be. And then where are they? He's saying, don't listen to Hezekiah, he's a liar. Right? He's a deceiver, don't listen to him. Now all of a sudden he's going to die. No seed. Right? No child. I'm letting God down. The line of David is now going to be wiped out. All these things are up on his in his mind. They all came on him at one time. Verse 3, it says, he wept sore or with a great weeping. He was spent. Okay, this is the 14th year of his reign. He's spent. Now he prays to God. He weeps sore. He doesn't go anywhere else like Ahaz does. Ahaz goes to the Assyrians. He doesn't. He turns his face to the wall and he prays to his Father in heaven, the only one that can help him through all this. And where did that come from? Where did that faith come from? It came from his upbringing, right? His mother who taught him and the prophets that helped. That's where he is right now. And what happens to him after he prays? Verse 4 and 5. Just like this. 4 and 5. It came to pass before Isaiah was gone into, out in the middle court. So Isaiah comes and tells him this. Hezekiah does the right thing. He prays. Isaiah's walking away. And he's probably also in a bad mood thinking, I'm giving him another part of bad news here. This righteous man. And he's walking away. And before he gets to the court, he gets the answer and he goes back to Hezekiah. Just like that. Right? So in verse 4. And it came to pass before Isaiah was gone out into the middle court that the word of the Lord came to him saying, turn again, turn around, Isaiah, and tell Hezekiah, the captain of my people, thus saith the Lord, the God of David thy father, I have heard thy prayer. I have seen thy tears. Behold, I will heal thee. On the third day thou shalt go up into the house of the Lord. And right away he gets this answer. A lot of times it's not like that for us, is it? Not like that at all. But for him, this righteous man, this righteous servant who put his trust in Yahweh, he was given the answer right away. So the next question we ask is, why would God do that to him? In Isaiah 53 it says, please the Lord to bruise him. We'll get to that in our last time. Why would he do this to this righteous man? Why would he do it to you? Right, we see this. Why is this happening to this family all the time? They keep getting this bad thing. Why? Or to ourselves. Why does this keep happening to me? I keep going through all these things. I'm trying to do the right thing. Why? It's a question that we probably always, or a lot of us ask about what goes on around us. And why does this happen? Why? Well, it's purifying the flesh. God wanted to see what he was going to do. And he does it. And he rewards him right away with the healing from this sickness because he truly was a servant of his father. Trials for further purifying, polishing. Let's go back to Isaiah 49 and see that, right? He polished the shafts, the arrows, right? Ready for a good, straight flight during trials. So, Brother Scott, you were skirting the issue this morning a little bit as well. And with Jacob, we're not going to go there. But you already brought our minds to it. What did Jacob do? He wrestled with the angel. When did he give up? When did he give up? He didn't. Until what?
The angels.
Until the angel blessed him. Right? He didn't stop in the trial. Was it hard? Yeah, he took, put his thigh out. He wrestled till the name of Israel was given to him. Right? He served until the name was given to him. The token of the blessing was given to him. Because he didn't give up. Because he went through that hard trial. He wrestled all night. Even though his hip was out of joint, he continued to wrestle until he got the reward. Until he got this token, the blessing. What about the Garden of Gethsemane? We find our master, right? At this point, he's probably saying the same exact thing that Isaiah 49 says. Isaiah 49 says, I'm spent. That's where Christ was. At this point, he was weeping sore to the point where it produced blood in his sweat. We're very familiar with this passage in the gospel message. There was a time of great sorrow and affliction. Wrestled in his mind three times whether he was going to go this way or if he was going to go this way. He prays to his father to let the cup pass from him. Please don't let me go through this. And he says, I've labored in vain. I'm spent. You ever feel like this? I ask you again. Hezekiah, Jesus in the garden, seemed like there was no way out. Let this cup pass from me. Think about Jesus. Right? Oftentimes we think he's thinking about the cross. And yes, he was. He was thinking about the pain that he was going to endure. But what about all the other things that were stacked against him? You know, if you look right in the context of the garden, what were the disciples doing? I guess his best friends. Three best friends. What were they doing? They're sleeping. Right? They didn't understand. But in John chapter 6, all the disciples began to leave. Couldn't take it. Right? They all leave except for the 12, which was nice. His own physical, his blood brothers didn't believe him. Right? They called him a madman. He's crazy. He's going nuts. They didn't believe him. What about the Pharisees? Day in and day out. You ever have someone on your back every day? Day in and day out. Everything you do, they're pointing it out, trying to trip you up, looking to make you look bad every day, calling you a deceiver, just like Hezekiah. What about his cousin John the Baptist, who was also called from the womb? What happened to him? Beheaded. How do you think that made him feel? He's looking forward to the cross now. And then he has this one of his good, close friends betray him into the hands of sinners. Judas Iscariot. Judas Iscariot. So, with all these things that went on for him, what happened? So what was the result as he prayed? Just like Hezekiah. Look at Luke chapter 22, verse 43. Luke 22, 43. Says, verse 42 as well, saying, Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. And that was it. That was the point where he hit the bullseye, right? Just like Hezekiah did. He put it everything into the hands of his father, his master, and he submitted as a servant. And then what happened in verse 43? There appeared an angel unto him from heaven, strengthening him. Come back to Isaiah 49. So verse 4 that we just spent some time on, talking about him being spent, being done, at the brink of going the wrong way. He prays to God, asks for help. And in verse 5 it says, and now, saith the Lord that formed me from the womb to be his servant, to bring Jacob again to him, though Israel be not gathered. Let's think about Christ with this. Was Israel gathered at that point? No, they weren't. They didn't believe in him. Though Israel be not gathered, yet shall I be glorious in the eyes of the Lord, and my God shall be my strength. My God shall be my strength. Very similar to the angel strengthening Jesus in the garden. Look at Mark chapter 14. So we're going to, we're actually going to finish a few minutes early today, I think. But I want to bring us into our next class. So let's look at Mark chapter 14. Mark 14, verse 26. And so as we end this section of our class, it says, and when they had sung a hymn, they went out into the Mount of Olives, which is just before this scene in the garden. Okay, so before they go to the scene in the garden, what do? They sing a hymn. What does it say in your margin? Anybody see that? You have a translation in the margin? They sang a what?
A song.
Okay, so back to Brother Casey and I's idea in this song. What song do you think that they sang? What song do you think they sang as they went out? Remember what I said yesterday? Like from, and Sister Rosemary confirmed this for me. Who is that that you confirmed that with? What sister was that that you texted?
Faith Erickson.
Okay, Faith Erickson, who's Jewish. So she texted her and said, is Joel right about 113 to 118 that they sing before the Passover, or around the Passover time? And she texted back what? What'd she say? Yes. Alright, you're giving the answer. She said, yes, I was right, so I felt good about that. So Psalm 113 to 118 were psalms that were sung at the time of the Passover. So if you ask, I ask questions, so and we gotta suppose about this, which one it was. Maybe it wasn't one of these, but I would like to suppose or put to you that it was Psalm 116. So I want to look at this, Psalm 116, as we close out the second song in Isaiah 49. Psalm 116, verses, especially 1 to 9. Psalm 116. So we just got to, as I said yesterday, sometimes you put yourself in the realm of what is going on. So if you were an outsider looking in, what would this have looked like? What would you have heard? As they leave the upper room, they go out and they sing a psalm, which I believe possibly is Psalm 116. Let's read this together. Psalm 116, verse 1 to 9. I love the Lord because he hath heard my voice and my supplications. Right? And he was about to. Because he hath inclined his ears unto me, therefore I will call upon him as long as I live. The sorrows of death compassed me, and the pains of hell got hold of me. I found trouble and sorrow. Then called I upon the name of the Lord. O Lord, I beseech thee, deliver my soul. How much closer could it be to Hezekiah and to the Messiah? Gracious is the Lord and righteous, yea, our God is merciful. The Lord preserveth the simple. I was brought low, and he helped me. Return unto thy rest, O my soul, for the Lord hath dealt bountifully with thee. For thou hast delivered my soul from death, mine eyes from tears, and my feet from falling. I will walk before the Lord in the land of the living. And I want you to jump down to verse 16, because I believe this certainly has to do with Hezekiah's upbringing. O Lord, truly I am thy servant. I am thy servant and the son of thine handmaid Abijah. Thou hast loosed my bonds. I will offer to thee the sacrifice of thanksgiving and will call upon the name of the Lord. I will pay my vows unto the Lord now in the presence of all his people. In the courts of the Lord's house, in the midst of thee, O Jerusalem, praise ye the Lord. That is the end of the second psalm. Now, what I'd like to do is just bring you to the next psalm, which is in Isaiah chapter 50. We got just 2 minutes just to see where we're going to go tomorrow. So the next song is Isaiah chapter 50, verses 4 through 9. So as we progress through these songs, this is kind of the intro to this one. As we progress through the songs, we look in the first song that we looked at yesterday, and we have this idea of preparation, right? Who he is, the preparation of Hezekiah. And then in the second song that we looked at today, we have this preparation, more preparation, and then we come to this point in his life that he has to overcome. Okay, and then in this, and he does overcome it, and then in this song, in the 50th chapter, we're going to see, we're not going to read it yet, but we're going to see that he is now past it. And he's ready to go to the next phase in his service toward God. So that's where we're going to go tomorrow, and that's all I have for today. So thank you for your time.